Okay, and welcome to episode 25, part 2. This is the interview portion of our show, and we're very excited. I'm your host, Rob G., and I'm sitting here with Mr. Elric Kane, Rebecca McKendry, and Ryan Turk. Hello. The whole gang.
The whole gang's here. The
whole gang is here, we promise
for
you.
For a momentous occasion.
Yeah. It feels like we never left.
And we've got two very special guests with us today. For you guys, when we tend to have people involved in some of these DVD companies on the show, like Scream Factory, and we had Severn on earlier this year, those episodes tend to be some of our most popular. And I as a fan myself, it's because I know I like to buy this stuff. I like to hear how this all works in terms of acquiring the rights and what it takes to put a movie out. You know, it's one thing to like see something on a VHS shelf and be like, I wish they would just put out that movie. But to actually physically get there is always fascinating. And now there's a whole new line coming through Lionsgate of the Vestron video titles. So joining us from Lionsgate is our friend Chayla Johnson.
Hello.
Hi. And what is your title again? You're the head of video.
Vice President of Marketing in Home Entertainment.
Thank you.
I should have
asked that before we started. But
it's all good.
And you've been there how long?
Most of my adult life.
I only ask that because I met you at a rando convention somewhere in Alhambra. Uh-huh. That Bill Moseley was at, and Andrew Devoff, and you and I just hit it off. We were like, Oh yeah, you were for Lionsgate? I write for this really cool website called creaturecorner.com.
Yeah.
And then we became best friends.
That was the beginning.
It's been about 17 years.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Holy
shit. I
started when I was 12.
You know, don't let the good looks fool you.
The entire, like, over a decade that I was with Fango, I worked with her, like, the entire way. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, she on top, she's one of us. On top of working
absolutely.
For Lionsgate.
Absolutely.
And being in that position, she is a huge horror fan. We've all talked
absolutely.
To her about horror stuff.
Well, that's what's great is that, you know, you rarely hear about people who are in, like, our, you know, and who are on the right side of things.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Not everybody in the studio system is just an exec who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about.
No, there's a few of us.
There are some of us out there that actually did good.
Yes.
Because it's the genre that has such great people in it. And that's, you know, so instead of it just being like another movie, it's like, it's people and it's what you care about, and it just makes all the difference.
Yeah, there's a passion there and a feeling like you have to do every release right because there are people who are really, really passionate about this title, no matter how small it is.
Yeah, someone at the studio's got to give a shit about it. Yeah. Real. Real.
And we also have, you know, when I asked Chayla to do this with us, I asked her, well, is there anybody else from the Lionsgate crew that you'd like to bring with you that might be fun for the show? And I kick myself for not thinking of it first, but sitting with us is Mr. Garo Setian. Did I say your name right?
You can say it that way.
I can say it
that
way. Listen, that's why I always go by G, because I can never get names right. But Garo is here with us.
Hello, everybody.
How do you say your last name, sir?
Setian.
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 Yes. Setian.
Yes.
And Garo is a good friend of ours. What's your title officially? I call you editor.
Yeah, I'm the an avid editor at Lionsgate of creative services.
And Garo edits a lot of the trailers, including all the trailers that you've seen for these new Vestron releases. I'm looking at a list of all your trailers, and it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
You've won awards for your trailer editing, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Three Golden Trailer Awards.
Wow. For what films were they?
I won Trashiest Trailer for a movie called Drive Through, which Shayla and I worked on. And I also got a Best Foreign Horror for The Eye 3.
Oh,
wow. Yep.
And one year I got Best Anime Trailer for Doctor Strange.
Wow. So
I'll just tell people I did the Doctor Strange trailer and won an award for it.
Yeah. I just love, there was, I was freaking out about the Nurse 3D trailer one day and you were like, oh yeah, I did that one.
I did the TV.
TV spot.
Gary, so, you've also done some really, really fun stuff. I remember one time you sent me over like it was a Leprechaun versus Wishmaster.
Yes.
And I have forever had that on a drive somewhere in a drawer. And every once in a while when I dust off this drive and I go, what's Lepwish? And I click on it and I realize it is the Leprechaun versus Wishmaster goofy trailer you put together.
Well, we should do that on Ultimate Purge
mashup.
Night.
It was the ultimate great mashup.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I went through every one of those movies, broke it all down, all of them, and got them to fight each other.
And this is but the great thing is, it was before we started getting these on the regular. As the internet became more powerful and more powerful, and we were starting to see more fan fueled mashups, you know, you were ahead of the curve with this stuff and you delivered the goods. Yeah. You know?
We should post up Lepwich. I think we'd see some people who love it.
I'll see again.
That was 2005.
Yeah.
That's when we met, around there. And, and I remember it was at the Sci-Fi Awards.
That's right. Yeah.
That is crazy. And also, Garrow's knowledge of horror, not only just horror, but like in particular creature features and like the Godzilla stuff is just unparalleled. We were on a trivia team together for a little while.
Right.
He's the last of my trivia teammates to finally make it onto the show. I apologize for that, but we saved the best for last.
Yeah. He still plays every month Dead Right Horror Trivia, and he is always a force to be reckoned with.
And he's also he's also the most optimistic of movie viewers because we have recently, we have formed the weirdest – we need a name for it. We have formed the weirdest group of dudes that watch movies in the last couple of months.
Dudes that watch movies is a pretty good name.
Maybe that should be
Neil
it.
Neil called it the Bad Movie Brigade.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. It consists of – here's what we had in common. There were these six dudes that had the desire to see Metal Storm 3D.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a 3D TV.
I'm
and
sorry.
Metal Storm 3D. Sure. So it's like Neil Marshall, Garrow, Josh Miller, who does Cine Family's Friday Night Frights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dave Parker and who's our last member?
Steven. Andrew Cash.
And Steve Scarlatta.
Yeah. Yeah,
great Steve Scarlatta, who produced Chudarovsky's. There's no reason for these six dudes to get together, but we do, and we watch questionable movies, double features of sorts. We just did the two Hercules movies in 3D.
Are those the Lou Ferrigno ones?
The Rennie Harlan one,
and then
the Brett Ratner one.
Oh man!
But I did bring my DVD double feature of those.
That was in between the two Lou Ferrigno ones because they were some of my faves when I was a kid. He plays them very straight. He's very serious through the whole thing. But I love the Lou Ferrigno.
He's dubbed the whole movie.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Because he's got this very swarthy, smooth voice.
So. And I mean, the only reason I brought that up is because literally, we could be watching the most questionable movie, and halfway through, Garrow, bless his heart, is like, well, this is pretty good. I mean, the production value and this is a pretty good story point, right? Like, he's the most optimistic of, like,
see you on Facebook bringing that optimism to Gods of Egypt? Was that you?
Yes, that was me.
Of course
me.
It was.
Yeah, I remember that discussion, too.
Yeah, I actually liked the movie. I mean, to me, it was
bless you. I love that you love movies that much.
Yes,
that you will find something in everything. Like, but that's really
cool. The movie had giant snake monsters with Amazons riding on them, and they breathe. Fire.
That's the movie. Gods of Egypt.
That's all you need.
No, I mean, I'm in.
He's done right there. Yeah. Snakes, women on them.
Mic drop. Boom.
So obviously we're going to delve into some of the stuff that you guys have done for Lionsgate. But before that, with everybody we talked to, because I mean, I know you guys, but I don't know little Chayla, I don't know little Garrow. What was it like? What was it
you
like?
You don't want to know little Garrow.
Take us back. Tell us about little Garrow.
Here's a two. what was it that got you into the genre? Because for us, obviously, we're of a certain age group, and we grew up with the Universal Monsters and the video generation, etc. So when did you fall in love with the genre?
I always loved horror. But I really got into it when I started being around more special makeup effects artists and getting introduced into that world. Mm. So that made me appreciate it all so much more. And that's when I started going to Fangoria Weekend of Horrors back in 95. And I just got sucked in. Again, it's like the people are great. And the films are just fun.
Mm-hmm. Was there any aspect that you... in terms of in the film business that you were focusing on, because you mentioned effects. So is that something that you just appreciated, or were you thinking about doing effects at some point?
Like, I was what never was it? Thinking about doing effects. I was kind of in that world a little bit, and that I was with somebody who was a special effects guy. So I got to know a lot about it. I learned a lot about it, and that was fascinating to me. It was actually really, really cool. Like, the whole monster making process was so cool. And, you know, so every time I just, you know, all the blood and how you do this and how that happens, it just sucked me in.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the specific movies when you're actually really young, though? Like the first one, because you mentioned you already kind of loved it, but that just kind of, like, you know, those ones that just, it feels like you saw it too young and it kept you up at night. Were there any titles like
that? Nothing really kept me up at night. I think it was mostly like all the 80s slasher horror. That's kind of what sucked me in. It was like spending the night at my friend's house and staying up all night watching horror movies.
Yeah, people never talk the social side of horror films when you're little. Such a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, it was less about, you know, it was more about craft and just the kind of general fun of it that, like, really brought you in.
Yeah, and then going to the conventions and starting to know the people who were involved in it. Yeah, it was like, the community was so positive and so fun and so nice, and just everybody's so enthusiastic about it. It's just, why would you want to watch a drama or a chick flick when you can watch something so fun and make believe? Because you don't want to have, like, regular life stuff when you watch it. You want to see monsters because that's fun. It's different. It's not
fantasy. Well, I mean, we always talk about the fantasy aspect.
Yeah. Right.
We grew up in a time, like, kind of the 80s horror. Like, yes, there were slashers, but there was so much imagination and just fantasy to the movies that it was escapism for us, you know?
Well, I find it interesting because a lot of the guests that come on here talk about the solo experience. You know, they come in and they go, well, I discovered it by myself and I was, like, watching movies by myself. But for you,
it was totally social.
It was a party.
Exactly. It's like, why would you not want to hang out with these people?
But you mentioned what was a huge thing for me, too, is I remember these slumber parties that we would have where it was like 15 girls and we would come, like, everybody would bring a horror movie. And that's all we would do all night long. And maybe like a scene or two from Dirty Dancing, but we would just fast forward to the dances. And then we'd go back to the horror movies.
And then what happened?
We knew that was coming.
Settle, Elric.
Elric's giving me eyes. I'm like, don't give me those girls. Don't give me those eyes, Elric.
But what about for you, Garrow? Because obviously you've always been an appreciator of at least the monsters in these monster movies. So was it something that kind of appealed to you when you were really young?
Yeah, I was really into dinosaurs as a kid. Yeah. That's where it started, the love of dinosaurs. And then I'd seek out any movie with dinosaurs in it. And then you go to end up with Godzilla movies. And then I remember discovering Gamera movies. And, you know, I'd watch them every afternoon when I'd get home from school. And then there was a thing called the 4 o'clock movie I grew up with, and that's what they do. They do like Monster Week, and it would be giant monster movies, and that was my favorite thing. Mm. But then they'd start doing other things like Hammer horror movies or Universal monster movies. So started digging into the Dracula and Frankenstein and all that kind of stuff. And then as I got a little older, then, you know, you discover, pay cable. You know, we had that. And then suddenly you're seeing these 80s slasher movies and things like that, you know. Mostly monster movies, though, you know.
It was a little more fantastical, less grounded, that really attracted you.
Yeah. Prophecy, remember stuff like that?
Oh, my gosh. Up? The beaver bear.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that bear so much. You know what? I always talk about how fans get everything they want, yet I'm in the corner going, I just want a baby prophecy bear that I can put on my couch. And just, like, and love him. That's all I want.
You're going to come home, your dog's, like, laying on the prophecy.
It's like licking the prophecy bear.
Herman's like, I love your prophecy bear.
Somebody get on that already. Come on. The merch
rights. Make me a pillow, John Squires.
Now, where are you both from originally?
I'm from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I'm from D.C.
Oh, D.C. Right outside D.C. in Virginia. Awesome.
Maryland side.
Oh, nice. Fairfax
Kensington,
side.
Bethesda. Yeah.
Fairfax Reston. Yeah.
And for both of you, what prompted you to move to Los Angeles?
I came out here with that guy who was doing effects, and I originally wanted to be in the music business and was studying that and trying to get into that, interning different places, labels and stuff. And then when I came out here and got an interview with A&M, and saw what they were going to pay me after going to University of Notre Dame and having some real work experience, I was like, are you kidding me? And then decided, you know what? You can kind of have the best of both worlds to be in the movie business. Uh-huh. So went that route.
All right. What about you, Gara?
I came out here for grad school at University of Southern California. And, of course, the main drive was to come out here and make movies somehow. Mm-hmm. And I was at USC for 4 years, and then I did sell a screenplay and, you know, kind of did a few odd jobs here and there, and ultimately wanted to, you know, I ended up getting more into editing. And I worked at an ad agency for a couple years. You did like rip-o-matics, which were like you'd take pieces of other old commercials and you'd put them together to create a new campaign. I'll look for that. Mm-hmm. And while basically when I did that, I learned how to edit on the Avid. Because when I graduated from film school, they were still cutting on flatbeds and video.
Oh, like Steenbecks.
Yeah. Steenbecks and what was it, the 8-plate or 6-plate or whatever that?
Yeah, exactly that.
Uh-oh. We had one day where they would wheel out the Steenback and no one could touch it because it was ancient, and they would take the sheet off and then the professor would show how to do it. And I mean, we weren't doing digital yet when I was in school. We were using toaster. No, we weren't doing film cutting.
Did you have 3/4-inch videotape?
Yeah, like we had the tapes, and we had this thing called the toaster that did all our effects. It crashed like every 5 minutes. Yeah. So I remember then you had tapes that you had to put out, and everything had to have a control track on it.
Oh, gosh, I remember those things.
But I do remember the Steenback and the Fullback tape where it was like, no one touch it. I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to wheel it back into the closet for another 365 days.
I felt like, I don't know about you, Garo, but I felt like we were being punked because we paid so much to go to film school. Yeah. And then on our way out, you know, that's all I got. That's how I learned how to edit, was on a Steenback.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden on my way out, literally the month before we graduated, they're like, so the school's going to get a new Avid system. And I'm like, are you serious? Is this the new future?
That was exactly what happened to me. And I had to learn the whole thing over again. And I do remember, like, I previously was working at a – before I went to the ad agency, I was at a production company for commercials, and I was cutting just 3/4-inch reels for directors, like cutting them together. And but I set up their tape library and made it all really nice and neat. So – that led to a job at an ad agency because they wanted me to set up their department all nice and neat. Yeah. And the thing that attracted me was they were getting an Avid. And I said, hey, if you can get someone to teach me how to use this, I will, you know, set up your whole AV department.
Nice.
Wow.
And that changed my life because that Avid experience, I eventually went from there to being an assistant editor at a trailer house. And I was always obsessed with movie trailers. That became my new thing. You know?
What's your favorite movie trailer of all time?
Well, I mean, there's so many good ones.
There are,
now.
But I mean, like, what's the one that stands out in your mind? Because I mean, like, when I was a kid, I used to cut mixtapes together, like VHS, but it was just trailers.
That's what I did, dude. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had
friends over, and I'm like, check out my latest mixtape of trailers, guys.
Dude, did you guys? We always called it dirty editing, but it's what I used to do, where you would take two VCRs and edit that way.
You get the color line.
Yeah. what do they call it? The control. I can't even remember.
It was a color line. It was like a line that just.
And it was supposed to keep you from. Oh, it was copy guard. That was it.
Yeah,
the copy guard.
Oh, those too. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, but that was my childhood. I would take all these tapes, and I had like 12 tapes of just trailers. I'd watch them over and over and over again. Yeah. But it would be everything. But I do remember the trailer that was probably most influential to me was the trailer of all movies. And I know Tobe Hooper probably didn't like it. Was for Life Force.
Oh,
the original.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah. She could destroy worlds. Is that like one line? She could destroy worlds. Yeah. And it was like, oh my God, this movie's going to be epic. And the music's playing really hard. Yeah.
Well, there was like a teaser though that ran before Rambo First Blood Part 2 where you're like floating through space. And it's on the Scream Factory Blu-ray. You couldn't find it on the internet for a while. And it's like, from the depths of space comes the ultimate terror. Yeah. And then the eye blinks. Huh. And then it just went into this crazy montage. And you see, like, you know, just progressively crazier and crazier imagery, and London burning down and blue lights shooting all over the place. I'm like, holy crap, I got to see this movie.
You know? All right, guys, I'm going to go watch Life Force. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Sold. Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about trailers a little bit later in terms of our favorites and, you know, some of the coolest teasers and stuff, because that's a big, you know, that I've written a bunch of articles about that too, and it's one of my favorite things, especially ones that use footage that isn't in the movie.
Yes.
That's like my thing.
Oh, yeah. Teasers.
But, the teasers. But before that, so tell us a little bit, Chayla, tell us a little bit about how the home video market has evolved in the last couple of years, kind of leading up to the Vestron line, because, you know, DVD has changed so drastically over the last couple of years, but now Blu-ray is such a collector's market. And as proven by companies like Scream Factory and Twilight Time and do limited edition stuff, it's fans will buy cool stuff if you give it to us. We want it. And I know the Lionsgate Library has been much coveted, and mm-hmm. You know, so we're happy that you guys are doing it now. But how did that
we're
happen?
Happy too.
How did we get to that?
We are very happy. Shayla, how many times was I bothering you in your office over the years saying, hey, Shayla, yeah. How about this title? How about this one? How about this one?
And every time I tried to pitch it, then I got laughed at and yeah. turned down, and they were like, there are not enough Shaylas in this country to buy as many as we need them to buy. So this line was actually pitched in like 2007.
That was wow. Dustin's
so.
Thing.
Dustin and no, it was Mel. No. We were when we were talking to Felsher and
oh,
like
yes.
and I was like, all right. So I put together a pitch deck and tossed it out there, and the answer was no.
Wow.
And since then, we have lost rights to some of the original ones we pitched, but so basically, cut to now, you know, where it's so much more difficult to have catalogs sell through. The market's just so different. People are watching everything on streaming. You know, everyone's watching things on Netflix. It's really hard to sell packaged media these days. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't want to pay for that anymore. And if it's so it really a lot of it is like an economic, you know, how can we make the economics of this whole thing work? 'Cause we've always wanted to put out. Bo Garwin, I've wanted yeah. to put out a lot of these films that really haven't had a good release. And it's just a matter of like timing and when we can pitch it to our executives and have them give us the green light. And it took until now where it's like, okay, instead of just putting it out, we have to make it into something, price it a little bit higher, and make it into something special for people. Mm. Give it like the special treatment.
Collector's edition.
Yeah. 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 And count and really just go to that targeted, really targeted market of just the collectors. And not try to, you know, it's not going to get into Walmart. No, it's not, you know, it's they're not going to carry something at that price point.
Mm. I think Chopping Mall could get into Walmart, really.
Well, let's go back a little bit because I'm always fascinated by what, you know, the economics are different for every company.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you mentioned pitching this several years ago and you had Felsher on board. You guys did manage to put out The Monster Squad on DVD because mm-hmm. I remember mm-hmm. Michael Felsher did a bunch yeah. of new features for it. Mm-hmm. And that was a big one that I remember people rallying for, like, yeah. we want Monster Squad, yeah. we want Monster Squad. So, I mean, how, like, at that period, did that one on DVD sell?
That one did great. I was, like, hero yeah. for that. And I was just looking for my next Monster Squad, you know? and I tried a couple things. They didn't really work and, you know... That was kind of disappointing.
Sundown was one.
Sundown. I really wanted Sundown, yeah. The Vampire in Retreat. I'm like, yes, it's Bruce Campbell. This is going to work. I'm going to be a hero again. And it just didn't really work.
That was like, what period was that? It was like 2007, 2008.
That would be probably maybe 2009 or 2010.
Yeah, it could even
maybe.
Be 10.
Yeah. I think 2010
because we did
maybe.
Put it out on Blu-ray too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was out on Blu-ray for a little while.
Sundown.
Sundown?
No, not Sundown. No, I'm sorry, Monster Squad.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
talking about. Yeah.
Well,
we lost those rights.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a Lionsgate film. So, you know, Lionsgate does a lot of licensing other libraries. We had some Paramount stuff. We have Studio Canal stuff. Yeah. We have some Miramax stuff. And so it just depends on that. So, you know, doing a good job with that. Was I don't know if that was part of the nail in the coffin or what, but when the rights came up, then they didn't renew it, and I'm sure they're, you know, having fun with their own receipts on that.
There were some other good ones I do remember at that same time because we also had Cujo at the time, mm-hmm. and we had
Alligator
came
yeah.
out.
Oh,
on
yeah,
I
those
love
were
Alligator.
Some part of the yeah that same pitch deck.
Was it the Ninth Gate? You know, so those yeah. those all were really they were nice new trend. That was like when Blu-ray was new.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
Yeah, we were trying to put stuff on Blu-ray at that time, and you know, some of them I got through, and some of them I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Are some of those still available with you guys? Things like the what would you say the Ninth Gate and
Alligator we lost. I think
Ninth
we lost.
Gate still
right.
is there, and
Ninth Gate is an artisan
right
pictures movie. So
and
we'll
I know Monster Squad and Cujo. Like while we don't have the rights to those are out there.
Oh, Olive, yeah. Olive. I think Olive films,
but they don't have any of the cool extra features right. that we
yeah,
have.
Yeah, that's yeah. the rub.
You take our movie, but you can't take our features, man.
Yeah, I know exactly.
But what are expectations in terms of you know numbers of things that you can sell? Because obviously your boss is kind of were like, well, I don't know if it's worth it economically to put something out. We learned, you know, Scream Factory, for example, will license something for I don't know what it is, 7 years or something like that. Whereas Twilight Time specifically only does I think they pay up front for a thousand. Yeah. So I'm like, we will pay whatever it will cost to print up 1,000, and they do it, which is interesting because that's a very
licensed
niche.
For a certain quantity.
Yes,
I thought it was like 3,000, right?
Oh yeah, I think it's somewhere one to three.
Titles were different. Yeah, yeah.
It was different depending because I think some of them also were part of a package deal.
Right.
But I think the thing I'm trying to get across is, you know, Lionsgate is a company that puts out, you know, the Hunger Games movies and Divergent and things that are used to moving millions of units.
Yep. So that's why I'm sticking my neck out for this and putting my butt on the line.
That's what I'm trying to put in perspective is when people say no to you, like in terms of Return of the Living Dead 3, it's because they're like, well, are you going to sell as many as Hunger Games?
Yeah, it's not that expectation. And obviously for these, it's a lot lower of an expectation, but there's still a certain threshold. You know, it still costs a certain amount of money for us to put something out no matter how many we sell. You know, we have to manufacture a certain number just in order to make our P&L work out. So, there is a certain number that we, you know, would like to hit, but we certainly don't have to do Hunger Games quantities.
So what about the first couple out of the gate? Because these were things that fans have been requesting all along. So is it a no-brainer when this finally went through, the restaurant thing, like, all right, chopping mall, got to do that one in Blood Diner?
Well, yeah. I mean, we listen to what people want. I mean, that's a large part of how this came out because it wasn't just me and Garo who were sitting here like saying to our executives, hey, what about this? What about that? What about that? You know, finally it got to the point where they were having to start to listen to this and, you know, they were thinking, okay, well, maybe this model of these, you know, higher cost special editions could work for us.
Yeah,
so
they were looking at like things like Twilight Time and Scream Factory and all that.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, well, let's give it a shot.
And Vestron was like the kind of go-to, was like
throwback.
I mean, it was the shit in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was awesome.
I was going to say Vestron was defunct in like 92, I think. Yeah. That's when they went kaput. But to kind of resurrect and dust off that name, I mean, you guys have these titles, but to put them under a banner and bring Vestron back to me is tantamount to MGM dusting off Orion. You know?
Right.
You nailed it. That's exactly the game plan. I mean, because it's a label now.
Yeah.
And the titles don't necessarily all have to be films that were old Vestron pictures.
Right.
There's
now
a lot in the old Trimark library.
Well.
Yeah. Lots in the old Trimark library.
Interesting.
So
it doesn't necessarily need to be a Vestron movie.
No, Return of the Living Dead 3 is not a Vestron film. That's an old Trimark film.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I gotta pull up a list of the others,
Chud and Chopping Mall and Waxwork 1 and 2 and Blood Diner, those were all Vestron. We started with those.
Right.
And we created like a mission statement, you know, to try to explain to people because we knew we wanted to have, there are so many more films, not just in the Vestron, but like I said, in the old Trimark library.
Because
that's kind of where I came from. That's
I'm pulling up the Trimark list right now.
That's interesting because, like, I mean, like, I forgot Return of the Living Dead came in 93, I think, or 94.
Yeah,
it was like
93.
After Vestron. So that makes a lot of sense. So you guys are legitimately bringing your label back and putting a bunch of stuff behind
it. It's in the spirit of Vestron and what it was. But
I have a whole bunch more movies to ask about.
And did you guys already own just the being able to even use Vestron as a logo and as an idea?
Well, we still own titles under that, you know, under that label. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we still had that name. We hadn't used that name in forever.
I think we own the name, right?
Yeah, there was some sort of legal stuff we had to go through with our attorneys to make sure that we were cool with it. And we probably have to prove somehow in the future that, you know, that we're using it and it's ours. And you know, because there are like T-shirts out there that say Vestron and stuff like that. So
people at Horror Trivia wearing those, I recall. Andrew Cash, I believe, is wearing one.
So it really is just like a label. Not an official part of Lionsgate. So it's not like Vestron, a Lionsgate company. It's like, it's just our label. It's for marketing purposes. So people kind of understand the spirit in which we want these to be received.
Well, so. I will say it's nice to see the new logo come up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new logo is really solid. Yeah. Who did that? Do you know?
I don't know who did the actual design. I remember Dustin showed it to us when he was like, look at this. And like, holy crap. That's great.
Yeah.
And it's super cool.
It came through Felsher, I think, too.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. But I don't exactly know whose hands-on work it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
And Garrett, what about cutting the trailers to these? Because obviously, I don't know, there's the thing that this Vestron Online does, which I think Scream Factory does very well, is it taps into this kind of nostalgic thing for when we fell in love with these movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We see that Vestron logo, we remember renting that title, you know? So when you tackle... Because I know you were excited right now.
It was. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that was part of the fun of that trailer. I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know, the whole thing begins with a trip through the video store.
Right.
And that was very specifically designed on that. Actually, our original plan was to, like, market this as, like, one trailer for the five titles. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I was at your desk and Shayla was showing me, like, all these other titles that we had coming up. And I'm like, ooh, you know, why don't we just make a trailer for each one, you know? I mean, you know, and we were able to make that work. I mean, you know, on the budget we had, we just had to come up with a look specific for the graphics. And I had a fantastic graphics guy, Perry Horovitz, who just designed this thing, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's just a certain look throughout the whole thing. So now, you know, all the trailers have a sort of unified feel.
Yeah.
You know, they have a certain open and close where you see the Blu-ray sitting there in a old video store. And but, you know, we have deals with music libraries and stuff, and it all works out great.
Did you go back to the originals, watching the original trailers? Not the films, but the actual trailers.
Yeah, some of them. Some of them I just kind of went in fresh because, you know, these are older masters. The masters are updated. They're all new, although we don't tend to get the splits and stuff for this audio on these like we do with a modern trailer. So I have to be more selective about which lines I can use because you're going through the film and just trying to find the clean lines of dialogue to use. Like Return of Living Dead 3, you know, I kind of designed a whole new trailer for that. But I think I did use some of the, like, I think Love Never Dies was in the original trailer. Yeah. So I kind of, you know, I'll
keep the spirit in.
Yeah, I definitely watch the original trailers and, you know, base these things on those.
Well, so far, I mean, the first two were Chopping Mall and Blood Diner, and they look fantastic. Yeah. So did these HD masters already exist, or like in the vaults, or like how did, or were there new restorations done?
They're new.
Yeah, how did these?
They're new.
Yeah.
Well, they look great, and Michael Felscher from Red Shirt Pictures does the features, and he always does a great job. So
he
there's
does.
Really good stuff on there.
Chopping Mall, he didn't do. Chopping Mall was the filmmakers. Mm-hmm. So that's Mitchell the only one.
Yeah.
The writer, right?
Steve Mitchell.
Who was in here with Larry Cohen, doing the Larry Cohen film.
Oh. Is he?
Wait, that was him?
The tall guy, right? The
yeah.
Guy.
Yep.
He's the producer of the Larry Cohen documentary.
Oh,
but he's the writer
wow.
of Chopping Mall.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that
I had no idea. He was like sitting over in the corner the whole time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'll tell you, as a fan, just watching these Blu-rays, it's a complete revelation. I mean, films like Waxwork, those were only available before on this sort of crappy full-frame 1.33 DVD before. And now you got the movie, you know, full widescreen and... Looking
uncut.
All nice and clean, uncut.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing, and you guys will be blown away by Return of the Living Dead 3.
Yeah, that one
transferred. I couldn't believe how
honestly,
good that movie
I don't
looked.
Think I've seen that movie since it came out on VHS, like back in the day.
It
like,
looks amazing.
So long.
But
I was
I
like, holy
it.
Crap, this looks so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Who has Necronomicon? Who has that title? Where would that be?
Oh, is that the Yuzna one?
Yeah, Yuzna. I'm just thinking because
the
Yuzna connection,
because
that's a fun one.
I think that might be one of those weird, like, Last Empire
just
picture
fell through
things.
The cracks.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. That would be a good one to put out.
Yeah, it's
never even been on DVD.
I'd love to see that.
No, I've got some weird foreign burn of it, and it's a lot of fun. You know?
I'm in here alive.
But now that I have looked over Trimark's selection, when's Warlock coming?
We have that on our short list.
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, there are, that's like I'm saying, there's so many that are, you know, that seem to be so pivotal from that time. I feel like staples, you know, of that time that just, a lot of it is a matter of timing. A lot of it is a matter of what elements are available and how quickly we'd be able to get a revised master and a cleaned up master.
Yeah, and it seems – I think there's some of these films, there are masters in existence because they were showing like an HD on like Amazon Prime or something. I know there were a couple of them.
Yeah, Amazon Prime has been showing a lot of the stuff in like surprisingly good form. So you keep – every time I see that, I expect, oh, a Blu-ray must be about to drop. But maybe they're not ever coming sometimes.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times like these masters are created for that type of service, the streaming service, and we're not always made aware of it. So it's like that's when we have to go and start checking and see what elements are available. Oh, this already exists? Okay, great. That's one step ahead, you know?
Right.
For the smaller films, because something, you know, because now the economy of scale that you're talking about means there's certain movies, the smaller ones, that wouldn't even make sense on a finite, like the film I would be most excited, as I always talk about, is The Kindred. But like no one knows about The Kindred, so it's almost like the reason why.
I've had other requests for that.
Yeah,
I feel
people like it, but I mean, yeah. It's not going to do the numbers.
You're not the only weirdo.
But it's not Return of the Living Dead 3 numbers, right? So, but you want, it's part of the fun part of releasing cool films is showing something people haven't seen. So one thing that I thought Scream Factory hasn't always worked for them, but it's a great idea, is putting two of them, two different movies, not like Waxwork 1 and 2, but like Bad Dreams and what was Bad Dreams?
Visiting Hours.
Visiting Hours is a great double feature.
Great.
Both awesome films, but they individually probably wouldn't sell anything, right?
Yeah, High Spirits and Vampire's Kiss was a lot of fun, too.
And Dungeon Master and what was the other one?
Dungeon Master 2.
I
haven't seen that double.
There's another one. Dungeon Master. I went blank. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Somebody will phone
over.
But
they've done some really fun double bills.
But just the idea of maybe like there might be a way to like different. I like The Unholy, and that would make a fun one because Unholy, no one would watch that otherwise. But
yeah, I mean, possibly down the line, since we're just starting, there are so many that we want to put out that we're hoping are like big home runs.
Yeah.
And since, like I said, my ass is kind of on the line for some of these. So like I want to have like some good ones come out that can put us solid on the map, and then if we have a couple that we want to experiment with and maybe making. The other thing is that, just kind of from a brand standpoint, the only thing that would worry me about putting together two films that aren't sequels would be making it look like a cheap bin item.
Yeah, like a dumb
because
film.
We've done that with Walmart. We've been there,
six
done
movies
that.
On one DVD.
Eight horror movies on one, you know.
We're not Mill Creek.
Right. So,
I was going to say, it's like, you get three Hellraisers and one Phantoms. All in one. Four films.
Man, that puts the bomb in Phantoms.
It's like the ones out of order, too. It's like,
Hellraisers. Right.
But I think the difference is if they look great, and the films are just interesting enough, I think you can get around them. But I totally get
And the other
concern.
Thing is, like, then it becomes like an artwork issue. Okay, how are you going to display the artwork? Yeah. Because to me, you know, it doesn't look great when you have to split the art. And especially if you want to use original art, it just looks cheap and like binny to me.
Have you guys considered going down the kind of path of hiring different artists to do other work, or do you
the custom art,
or is that a sore spot because it's competitive field, or
it's more money?
No, it's a sore spot for other reasons,
because
the answer is yes, and the answer is I can't say anything else about it right now.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Not that you'd ever need alternate art for Chopping Mall, which is the greatest design.
That is the greatest cover ever.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about, like, that's why we wanted to use all the original art, because back then, here's the funny thing. Back then, you can do things you can't do now. So for Chopping Mall, we couldn't get the artwork through the MPAA, because everything has to go through the MPAA if it's rated, right? We couldn't get the artwork through the MPAA, so we had to alter it, because you couldn't show limbs. You can't have someone in a bag that seems to be chopped up and dead. Like, so we had to move the artwork down so you can't see the bottom of the bag. Wow. So it's possible that there's somebody down there with a bag over their head and their eyes sticking
out. Right.
So
there's suddenly less lime under there.
Right.
So there's actually a specific thing saying you can't have limbs.
So the MPAA would not allow that current VHS box cover back onto the market.
Yes, correct. Even though we put Chopping Mall out on DVD in 2004 and we used that original artwork. Obviously, and I feel like someone pulled records that might have my name on them somewhere, but apparently it like didn't go through the MPAA, and so that's why it was out, but they don't care. So now it's kind of like, we just got to lay low.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's
weird.
Crazy. Yeah.
Oh, my
God. I don't understand how.
We're looking at the original artwork right now.
See, it's all better. It's less frightening now.
We will do a shot-by-shot comparison later.
She could, in this artwork, she could just be, like, underneath the bag hanging out.
Exactly.
And, like, poking her head
just relaxing.
I don't understand how it's, like, this versus this. It's such a subtle thing, but apparently, oh, my gosh, this is fine. The other one's corrupting the youth of America. It may as well just be Satan.
Well, not only that. I mean, like, it's an 86 film. Like, artwork is that old.
Yeah.
Come on.
Plus, what video store is it in to be seen? Yeah. I mean, people are buying this directly from a website for their home. You know, it's
a kid looking through something like Chopping Block for Mommy on Amazon,
right?
A child might come across this.
That's true. This is like a perfect time to tell you guys that on my way here, I checked our Facebook messages that no one ever checks.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and there's one from Jackie Kong to Becca saying she'd love to come on and do the show.
Yes, boom.
Whoa, there you go.
Come soon.
So I literally forgot to tell
her. Do we need to hire an intern to look at messages?
I think we do.
Apparently. Awesome.
And I love The Being. Her first film, The Being, is wild as well. Oh, it's a fun movie.
No, Jackie and I, we've done a bunch of them. They always put us up on those.
Yeah, The Being's really good.
They always put Jackie and I on those women in horror panels together, which I absolutely hate doing, but I'm like, I'll do it to talk about why we shouldn't have women in horror panels. And so it's kind of counterproductive, but good still. But yeah, they always put Jackie and I up on those. And she's fascinating to listen to. Yeah. So many like great from the trenches, like stories about directing in the 80s and everything. Mm-hmm.
Remember your hashtag, Elric? What was it? Kong is king.
Kong is king.
And I will respond back to that message or have my intern do it.
Blood Diner was really like underseen though, like I think besides back in the day. But that's they're the ones when the movies like Chopping Mall is one I would always expect eventually to get to see because it's such a fun movie. But things like Blood Diner, I feel like, is hitting that kindred spot where it's like, yeah, people have heard of it and have seen the cover. But a lot of people haven't actually seen the movie, and it's a really funny movie. It's more of a comedy horror, you know, more comedy than horror, but it's in that perfect 80s vibe, and it's a pretty wacky movie. Is that the one where, at the start, the guy's driving the car right into the mountain, the cop's driving right at the start and drives right into the mountain? There's something in the humor of it where, like, straight off the bat, you're like, what the hell
They have a talking brain. Bubbling water, and he's insulting them all the time.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new version, but
uncle
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Uncle Anwar.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of like a Loose Blood Feast remake.
It's supposed to be a sequel.
It was actually, it was supposed to be a sequel to Blood Feast.
I see.
Because the Sheetar is still, it's the same kind of, I'll call it mythology from the original, where it was like an Egyptian god that they were doing the blood sacrifice for.
Why didn't it? Was it just purely a rights thing at the time? Like he just wouldn't give her the official
for blood
right?
Feast?
Yeah, to make it a part
I can't
two.
See Herschel Gordon Lewis being like, no, this is sacred to my
heart.
Unless
he's not paid. Yeah, I mean, he's a money guy, so.
Yeah.
Well, Elric,
yeah, and some
there's
of the special features
on there.
They go over there. I was going to say, they answer
perfect
that.
Perfect tie-in.
But Are you guys? Who's running the Facebook page, the restaurant Facebook page?
That was actually started by a fan.
Yeah,
so that is
unofficial.
Okay. I'm trying to confirm or deny like who's running it. Who, but, if that's an official? Yeah.
Well, we were like, great, run it. We love you. Great, please put this up. Okay, sure, put this up. Okay, sure. Like, you know, who am I going to turn down help on this?
Right,
no way, man.
Wow. No, they're very thorough. I mean, I'm very surprised by how in depth they go. Always putting links and trailers.
I'm gonna have to like this thing. I didn't even know about it.
Okay, guys, can we throw some titles at you?
Hold on, let's cut the shit. Go straight into slaughter.
Okay, Lair of the White Worm.
That's a good one.
It's a good one to do.
I like it. Freaking love that one.
Yeah.
Needs to happen, guys.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's very trippy for those of you guys who haven't seen Lair of the White Worm. Really crazy film, but has Hugh Grant in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Raul Julia or William Hurt? Neither of them? That's because it's Spider-Woman.
No.
Yeah.
No,
but it's directed by Ken Russell.
Yeah, Ken Russell.
Real trippy dream sequences with nuns and snakes.
Anti-religious nuns kind of penis imagery. Yes. It's really bizarre.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
Paramedics.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's a comedy. It's a comedy.
It's
in the police.
No, I've seen this. It's the one with the fat boys.
The fat boys
are in it. It's hilarious.
Oh, hold the phone. The fat boys are in it? Let's get on
the poster with the ambulance and you're all like hanging out the side.
You mean Disorderly?
No, it was their after movie.
Okay, I am confusing it with Disorderly.
Because Disorderly is amazing.
Oh, you led me astray.
And I would love that movie on Blu-ray.
All right, let's go to a real title because I sat next to Garrow at Slaughter High. Only a couple weeks ago, we were sitting right next to each other at about, what time? 4 a.m, I believe.
4 a.m. I was drifting in and out of consciousness.
And I was going to leave. Yes. I was done with, I always leave about 4 o'clock so I can get home and sleep. And when it was Slaughter High, which is pretty much like my first slasher as a kid, I sat right back down and went, oh yeah. And I loved every second of it. I love that film.
I think it's the movie with like 35-year-old high school students.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one on our short list as well. The only thing that kind of bums me out is some of these films we tried to release a couple years ago and they just didn't do so hot.
That DVD released in DVD?
It didn't. Well,
that was like an 80s label we tried.
So here's the thing. In an effort to try to get some of these through, then we had branding at the time that was kind of like this.
The cartoon hipster.
But I feel like like it was before there were really hipsters.
That wasn't you. Was it your...
It was under my... It was under my umbrella. It wasn't mine.
I only joke because I was recently on a trip and I bought it on DVD because I had never seen it. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, yeah, they were trying this, like, weird branding.
But that was the only slasher.
It was the only – it was basically – it was supposed to be the same type of nostalgia thing, but not just genre titles. It was titles from – I was – at the time, there was someone working with me who really liked these 80s movies. And she – you know, so when – in – at the same time I was trying to pitch the Vestron stuff back then, it got turned down. Then there was this other idea, okay, why don't we have these movies? And some of those movies were a little bit more mainstream because they weren't just genre titles and we could brand them like this. And they were like, sure, you can give that a shot. So we gave that a shot, but it looked like this. There was a little hipster dude on each one of these covers and they each said something different and they had something different written on there. They had like little...
I
never saw that. Well, I just remember the classic skeleton guy with the graduate hat and the apple.
Well, no, Slaughter High was generic artwork. That's the Slaughter High edition I have.
I think if the film came out under that sort of presentation where it evokes what you remember
Marty,
about
or something
things.
With Marty with the jester,
might have a different reaction. This whole line, it was called The Lost Collection. But Slaughter High was the only horror one because it was Morgan Stewart's Coming Home, which is one of my favorites. And it actually says on the cover, John Cryer, the original hipster. It's right there on the cover.
Didn't we also
it's almost like VH1.
Do we have private resort?
It's
private resort.
What we don't know is Chayla modeled as that hipster. They just drove over
Johnny Depp.
Repossessed was one of them.
Oh my God.
Yep.
I forgot there was like six of them, and they were all under the banner of the Lost Collection. But I could see, since the other ones are primarily comedies, I could see Slaughter High getting. You know what it was? When I saw it come out, I confused it with Student Bodies.
Student Bodies
is kind of
like,
that weird
comedy farce.
Version.
It's wonderful.
I always got those mixed up initially on DVD, but totally different things.
You know
but,
what? If
but you
were
going
to do
Student Bodies,
if you were going to do a double bill, Repossessed and Slaughter High, that's not too bad.
Yeah, it isn't.
You know, if you're just going to put it,
I think you're cheapening Slaughter High's value.
Yeah,
aim higher, my friend.
I like
aim
Repossessed.
I think it's the Slaughter High would be a really.
I think
good
it's
addition.
Like shopping mall.
I'm not telling you.
Also, get Carolyn Monroe to do an interview.
Yeah. I will also say Vestron has it's a kind of a hidden gem. I'll call it. You guys have Fear. Which is this
Ally Sheedy?
Yeah. Oh. I love this movie. I've written about it on the site and everybody's like, I've never even seen this. So it's this movie from 1990 starring Ally Sheedy and it gets confused with Fear,
Mark Wahlberg.
The Marky Mark movie. Yeah, Elric sitting his chest.
Everyone always knows.
Everyone confuses it with that
she
one.
She's telekinetic.
Ally Sheedy plays a psychic who starts getting flashes, not even like psychic flashes. Like she usually is just like, I can sense things about people, but she somehow psychically connects with a serial killer, so she actually can see him killing people. But he knows, like he can feel her watching him, so he makes sure to never reveal his identity, but she starts getting flashes, like she'll catch a glimpse of him in a mirror or things like that. So she's trying to help the police, but the police think she's full of shit, but the slasher or the killer can see her as well, so he can see through her eyes, so he starts picking up glimpses of who she is as well, and starts targeting her.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Can you take that back to one? Yeah. And re-explain that?
There's a lot of like, I can see you. No, you can see me. No, oh, there you are in the mirror.
I think that was made for like Showtime or something.
I think
something.
It was too. Yeah. I wrote an article about it a couple of years ago I stumbled on it and was like, this is actually pretty good.
But Vestron did it on VHS? Was that like a...
Yeah,
it's a Vestron title.
Yeah, I'm looking at Vestron pictures right now. Are you primarily thinking of just sticking to the horror titles? Because I see now there's things like Dream a Little Dream. Is that a potential for some point down the line if the horror line does well?
Yeah, well, that's something we've actually already discussed in terms of what can be part of our Vestron line. And really, you know, we wanted it to be genre titles. That's not to say that we don't want to release other films in this fashion. Because we're having this initiative for these titles, it's helped our executives kind of think a little bit better about like, okay, what else can we do and give it this type of treatment? So there are kind of different levels or different tiers of how we would treat a film, whether it would, you know, putting it on Blu-ray and give it like the special treatment and have a higher price, or would it be, you know, something that's a little bit lower priced as long as we have a good master source element that we could use and that would be, you know, something you'd more likely see in like Walmart or something like that.
Can you just renumber those on the spine, those that are not horror titles? Because I really don't want Dirty Dancing. Kind of disrupting the number system you guys are putting on the spines. Yeah, I do like the
number system. Man, you know how many times I've released Dirty Dancing since I've been at Lionsgate?
But what about Havana Nights?
Havana Nights.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, how about this? Instead of throwing titles at you, are there any that are off the mark? Like, things that were Vestron but are no longer rights available to.
Space Truckers.
Space Truckers is not going to happen.
Whoa.
I tried to negotiate to get that back, or have our person negotiate to get that back, and it just wasn't going to happen. I was super bummed.
Bummer.
Huh. I haven't thought about that title in forever.
Yeah. Wow. Square Pig.
I just remember Black Eyes.
Yeah. Steven Dorff.
I kind of want to see that one now.
Yeah, now I'm like, okay.
That's some good, that's some good makeup effects and stuff. Yeah.
There is. Yeah. No. That's pretty good.
I'm glad that you fall for Space Truckers.
I do.
You actually
I do.
Took some time out of your life to fight for Space
Truckers. Yes, I did.
You're the
did.
People,
that's
right?
Good. She really is.
That's legit. But are there any awesome. What else are any dream titles that you guys were really just personally would have loved, even if it's not on the cards directly?
Well,
just something that you
mine was Return of the Living Dead 3, so we already got you that. Got and it. That's yeah. kind of the glory of like being the one to come up with the schedule, is that you can put the ones you like on.
At the top of the list, yeah.
The gates.
Oh yeah, where's the gate?
That would be an awesome title.
Mm-hmm.
The gate was a big.
Guys?
The gate was another big title for you guys too.
Yes.
DVD,
yeah.
And that was in theaters, and you know, it was very well remembered.
The gate, that's a lot of people's childhood.
I just remember that being an event DVD when that came out.
Yes, that was you know, applause on from our sales team as well.
The gate too. I had a Canadian DVD of.
But, you know, it's the
gate
I got
too.
That too.
Yeah. See, that's why I love Garrett. He owns the gate too as well. Let's see. What about I'm not going to throw up titles, but anything that's come out previously on, like, because I have a lot of the Lionsgate six packs and stuff like that have things like Chud 2 and Earth Girls Are Easy and these kind of titles. Are all those still in house as potential?
They all are. Those are all thought about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of secrets in this room.
Yeah.
Secrets.
There are.
There's a lot of winking and
fine. Let's go to
gesticulating.
Let's go to our trailers here, guys.
All right.
I got a good list.
All right, start with Congo. Break it down to me. Why is Congo such a great trailer to such a shitty movie?
Are you talking about the teaser trailer where you're just going through the jungle?
Oh, my God. It's out of focus. Yeah. I wanted to see that movie so hard. And then that, God, it's just a bad movie.
It's a really bad movie.
It's just not fun.
Can we talk about Eraser? The trailer for Eraser.
Oh, yeah.
Eraser was good.
That's a good trailer.
Really? Wow.
No, I'm kidding. Right, no, but the trailer, I remember like the one that I think the trailer that made me reflect on trailers the most was, well, there were two. It was one was Life Force. The other one was Runaway Train.
Oh, Runaway Train.
The trailer for Runaway Train is intense. And then I just remember Bram Stoker's Dracula. With the blood. The blood kind of like seeping together. Oh.
That's like Shining, as
My biggest fear of my childhood was two trailers. And I later saw the movies and was like, eh. But I didn't see the movies until much later because the trailers had terrified me. It's Alive, where it was just the baby carriage.
Well, that's rotating. Then they're like teasers.
Yeah, that was like the teaser spot.
There's
and
one
then
thing
the other
wrong with the baby.
Exactly.
It's Alive.
And then it just it rotates around and then it like rack focuses into the claw. And that was it. And I was just like, oh my God, this is horrifying. And then Magic. I remember seeing the trailer before a movie I was watching. I remember seeing the trailer for Magic, and it didn't even matter what the movie was. The trailer for Magic fucked me up so bad.
It was just the ventriloquist dummy. Talking, he's saying, hocus pocus, we take her to bed. Magic is fun. We're dead.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. You are so next level with that. Holy shit.
He should just be here for weird references and voiceover.
We need somebody to chime in with the exact dialogue.
Do you know, Garrett, do you know exactly when? I know we had the director of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 on our old show, and he was a trailer cutter too. And I remember asking him the same thing, but I don't really know if you can pinpoint when trailers when was the period when they really started showing you too much in the end, and when it became all about like maybe overselling rather than the teaser version of trailers.
Oh, they've been doing that for years.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at some old like I've been getting some of these Olive movies or the Blu-rays of some old science fiction movies,
and they just show
literally everything. Yeah. There was one called, what was it, the Invisible Monster, or what was it, the Magnetic Monster. there is nothing left in the movie.
But that's because there's nothing to show in there. They have to show you everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, big blockbusters, like big Hollywood films where you're seeing the ending, like, right there in the trailer. Yeah. Like, do you have a philosophy on that yourself?
But I think they've always been doing that.
Yeah. There's a lot of movies
I remember being more like teasers. If you can make it look like that's not the ending. So if people don't know it's the ending, it's not until they've already paid to get in there to see the film that they are like, oh, that's the ending?
That's the secret to doing it right. You know, you mix it all. You got to mix up these imageries in a way where you're not...
Well, you don't end with it in the trailer. You don't end with the ending like a wreck, you know. Or,
well, quarantine,
but you don't know that until you see the movie. Yeah. And unless you're a goober that's like going, oh, they showed the last scene in the trailer, then you're ruining it for all your friends.
Well, think of even Die Hard did that. The first Die Hard showed the building blowing up.
Oh, yeah, and him jumping off the money shot.
Oh, the building. Right. Yeah. I know.
But how come it didn't bother me back then? The poster.
Why does it bother me now?
The Deep Rising is a callback to episode A.
That is three times we have mentioned Deep Rising tonight.
Oh, my God.
That one had a good trailer. Full Scream Ahead.
Full Scream Ahead.
Yes, copy.
I mean, can you guys just, like, get that one from TriStar?
Please, it needs some love.
I have a blue one.
I'll do the commentary.
There's a Blu-ray. There's a Blu-ray.
It's a double feature, right?
A special feature.
Guys,
you want a collector's edition.
You want a collector's edition with a lenticular cover.
You get Ryan and I to do the commentary. It's going to be fucking epic.
You know what we should just do, Becca, as a side? We're talking sidebar conversation here. We should just record an episode of Shockwaves that's
just the two of us during Deep Rising.
Elric and I are okay with this.
Elric, are you good with this?
It's got those Tycho drums. The soundtrack is amazing for Deep Rising.
Elric's in for the Kindred. yeah, I'm there for the kid. Yeah.
Well, for me, I remember when I was a teenager and all the horror sequels were at their kind of peak in the 80s. What I loved was the teasers before the movies were even done because they would kind of – I have a couple that I brought up that I wrote about, but the most famous – I lost my mind when Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
Oh, the Excalibur thing,
doing this thing where they were hiding that it was the horror movie. That become like so this guy is just at the lake and it's got this beautiful music.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's like some legends can never be, or reborn or whatever. And then you see the freaking chainsaw come out of the river.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Get blown.
Just like Excalibur.
It's Excalibur. Struck by lightning, and then it's Leatherface.
And Jason Goes to Manhattan.
Jason Goes to Manhattan is another
so much better than the movie.
That's the promise of that trailer.
Yes. Yeah. And the ones you're talking about too, Rob, like you and I were at the same shows.
At the
Fangoria Weekend of Horrors, what we always looked forward to as kids was the Mike Gingold and Tony Tapone doing the trailer show. Because they would come up and be like, welcome, Fango. Welcome, Fango attendees. So the studio just brought us something new. It's never been seen before. Yeah. We'd be like, oh, my God.
The good old days.
They would show these trailers that were fresh off the assembly line from the studio. And I just remember the excitement and the energy, the crackle that would be happening. So I remember seeing the Leatherface trailer in that crowd, and it was just amazing, amazing.
Well, the funniest thing about the Leatherface trailer is I'd interviewed Jeff Burr, who directed it technically. There was a lot of issues in post-production, but he said he got hired for it, and I think that weekend he went to go see Nightmare on Elm Street 5, and the Leatherface teaser played before, and he's like, I just got hired to direct that movie that has a date on it. That had nothing to do with that teaser that just showed.
But, even at AFM, which I did not go to this year, but like for 10 years prior, every year that I was with Fango, I always went to the American Film Market. And you would literally just walk room to room and see teasers for these movies that had never been made yet. Like, I remember seeing the Nurse 3D stuff long before they ever shot the movie.
Yeah.
And there was one from like 4 years ago. I saw a teaser for a movie called Squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a horror movie about killer squirrels. And the teaser was fucking unbelievable. It was amazing. And I don't think the movie ever got made.
It never got made.
But the teaser was brilliant.
We need people up for that one, right, Rob?
I know about five people who were attached to direct that, and then it never happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I know one of my favorites is Suspiria. I think it's just that creepy
skull thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Skull. It's like the girl kind of turns around and it turns out she's just a skull. And I think they use the tagline, the only thing more terrifying than the first 80 some odd minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a really good one.
That was kind of a line they use a lot.
I liked the Frankenhooker trailer a lot.
Oh, that's a great one.
Too.
Yeah.
I love Frankenhooker.
Where it begins in black and white, like it's the old one. And
yes.
From the makers of Basket Case and, you know, Brain Damaged is Frankenhooker.
And it's got like this great 80s, like,
what
like,
yeah,
like, great song to it. Frankenhooker is a great one.
But I was always, because I do, like, I follow those exploitation films of the 70s. That's definitely always been like one of my passions within horror, but it was always the trailers that pulled me in, like Avenging Disco Godfather, the trailer for that was just, I know, giggle, but it's one of these things that like, I fucking love that trailer. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, I remember seeing a ridiculously young age, way too young to see Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, just because I thought the trailer was so wonderful.
Well, pre-internet, that was the way to find out about movies. You send that on the VHS, and that was, I got so, and I, my favorite thing in the world was when it said, more previews coming after the feature.
Yeah, and I was keep watching.
Yes.
Yeah,
I watch a feature, go through the credits, and I get to watch more trailers.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny, like, I used to, like Ryan, I would collect these trailers over time from like different movies, and it would usually be big blockbuster movies like Star Trek II or whatever it is. But then I remember a buddy of mine introduced me, and he passed away, great guy, Dave Krause. He brought me this tape. He's like, you got to see this. It was called Mad Ron's Trailers from Hell.
Oh, yeah.
And all it was 70s exploitation, you know, horror movies like, you know, I drink your blood and I eat your
skin. Is that where Trailers from Hell actually took their... tagline?
They might have. I don't
know. I mean, Joe Dante's.
Because it was, you know, it was actually a thing. It was hosted by a guy in his ventriloquist dummy, and they would like talk, and then they'd show all these stupid trailers, and it was amazing. And I just fell in love with these crazy trailers for like, you know, Three on a Meat Hook. You know,
it's like the 42nd Street collections. I
used to see all those trailers. Like, I always loved, and it's how I got into really into Doris Wishman, because her trailers were so weird, where they would just be like a woman walking was all you would see, but then there would be like a 2-minute monologue of a guy. You'll see sex without shame. You'll see love without shame. It's just like, she's just
and they
walking.
End with the, and they usually end with the line like a film that had to wait till the permissive 1970s to be released.
Yeah. Like that. The story of sex your parents never told you. And it was just, they were always such a sleazy monologue.
And then they'd interview, they'd have the interviews with the people coming out of the theater, like the old woman.
I Dismember
like,
Mama.
They showed everything. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yara, is that I Dismember Mama where they do the fake news report right outside the cinema and they act like it was the most violent film ever?
Yeah.
That's
one guy who's
a good
going
one.
Crazy.
Yeah, the guy's going, that's a good one. That's,
that's a good trailer.
Yeah, that's a
really I recommend strongly, because they do make a lot of these DVDs. They're called 42nd Street Forever.
They're
and
awesome.
There's like
wonderful.
Four or five volumes. Volumes
good
of
for
it.
Parties and just
but
have there, it
it's just hours of trailers for all these kind of weirdo horror movies.
And almost
and
in all those cases, you don't really want to watch those whole movies.
Yeah,
anyway, you know, so
the trailers
like everything. It's everything you want. You
know? Especially with like they do a lot of the video nasties movies. Some of them are great. Some of them, the trailer's enough.
Well,
yeah.
There's a two disc set for Video Nasties Volume 1 and Volume 2 that have documentaries, but they're also second disc is just loaded with trailers.
Oh,
that's all it is.
Yeah,
and that's not the case with Vestron Films, because you just feel like you want to buy those and own
those
in your house.
Yeah.
And keep your job going. That's the feeling you'll have.
Blood Diner Waxworks,
especially at Christmas.
They're films. Yeah. Chopping Mall.
I got a question for Garrow really quick. In terms of, because you've cut trailers, you know the history of trailers, but you know, what is the one piece of like soundtrack music that's been so overused in trailers? Because I remember post Bram Stoker's Dracula, it was dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun, dun. And it was like, oh, you're using that in Lord of Illusions. Got it. Okay, next trailer.
The Aliens theme is the big one. But I remember.
Oh, see, I would always say the single plunk of a keyboard that sounds like it's a kid.
Right.
But okay, but let's hear what it is.
Well, there's a couple, because here's what happens, though, because you just mentioned like the music from Aliens or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it's like, it sometimes is the music of Aliens, but sometimes it's something that sounds like the music from Aliens.
Right.
Like, I remember I did a trailer for a movie called Rottweiler. And that one, if you watch the trailer, you think you're hearing the music from Aliens.
Yeah.
You're not. It's a film like a library cue that sounded like it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But there was one track I remember got used so much. I think Chris used it like two or three times over the years we were there. But we've been there a long time.
Yeah.
It was called Red Room or something. And it was like, oh, God, I don't know if I can imitate it. It's just like, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. I mean, you'd know this thing if you heard it.
I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like a choir. It's in the Alien versus Predator trailer.
You've heard it
a million times.
Yeah.
You know?
For a little while, they were using, like, after Dark Knight, all of a sudden it became like the Dark Knight theme is like in every action sequence. Like, V for Vendetta used it and all that kind of stuff.
And you can tell, like, you'll go back and look at certain movie trailers, and they always have music from a movie from about, like, maybe 4 years before it. or something. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at like a film, you know, that came out after Krull, you know, you'll hear the Krull soundtrack a lot. Or Stargate soundtrack was used a lot in some things, I remember. Yeah.
I really liked your trailer for the movie The Frontier, which is playing at the Egyptian Cinema November 19th.
Oh, wait.
Yes. Which is a week from now. Still tickets available. Now,
excellent film.
But actually, it was fun because I actually, threw that your way. And what I really liked about your trailers is like it made me – I just finished the commentary and watched it and interviewed my friend Oren, who directed it, and it made me want to watch it again. Yeah. And to me, that's the ultimate – it was more exciting. Like it's my goal. Condensed version.
And every time. I try and infuse it with the excitement and energy just that I love about movies and that I, you know, whatever the film is, if for some reason the film doesn't quite measure up to maybe what the promise of it is, I'm going to make sure the trailer has the promise of it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So but at least you will deliver. On
yes.
I promise to make it as exciting trailer. And awesome as possible. You know?
Wow. All righty. Well, we're almost out of time. We got to wrap up now, but thank you so much, both Shayla and Gara, for coming down. Yep. The first few titles of the Vestra Online are out there. My favorite so far is Waxworks. I love the movie. I love that we finally have it in
so
widescreen and
it
uncut.
It looks so good.
Yeah.
And it looks great. The special features are great. Very candid. Anthony Hickox has no problem.
It's amazing. Some
talking
stories
about how
hear.
He
yeah.
dated both chicks in the yep. movie.
Right. the special features just, I was glued to those things, man.
Yeah.
That just, what a great job Michael Felsher did.
Yeah, for sure.
I kind of can't wait to watch Bud. Chud 2
now. Chud 2.
Yeah. I really need to revisit it. Okay.
I think it'll fit the bill for you. It's
okay.
that kind of
and I'm really,
it's
I'm
your
really,
era.
It's my era. Yeah. I need to rewatch this.
Yeah, Return of the Living Dead 3 is the one I'm really excited about now, too. So, hopefully they will continue to thrive. So pick them up.
Let's do it.
And let's get some more titles going.
Yes.
But thank you guys very much. Really appreciate it. And
thanks
we
for
will see
us.
You soon.
Thank you very
Rage.
Much.